I am speaking to you at a moment of grave crisis.
I'm Jeff Turner, and this is Recall. It's a series about history. Not the ancient past, but history that's still hot to the touch. In this first season, I explore a revolutionary political movement that brought a modern democracy to the brink. You can find Recall, How to Start a Revolution, on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, I'm Ian Hanna-Mansing. Welcome to Checkup's Ask Me Anything podcast. On this episode, it's our AMA about the federal carbon tax.
Who's ready to axe the tax?
Conservative politicians across this country are not telling the truth to Canadians. If they really don't like our approach to pricing pollution, they can develop their own approach.
That is making life more unaffordable for not only Saskatchewan residents, but all Canadians as a whole.
The carbon price is actually the least costly way to lower emissions.
April 1st, the carbon tax is set to rise from $65 per ton to $80 per ton, and the price on carbon is set to go up another $15 each year until 2030. The intention behind the policy is to encourage consumers and businesses to change their behavior and to transition to greener forms of energy, but it is a polarizing topic. Several premiers have been calling on the Liberal government to pause this year's increase or scrap the idea altogether, and brought that message to Ottawa this week as they testified before Parliament. In his own province, Manitoba Premier Wab Kanu says he plans to ask for an exemption to the consumer-facing carbon tax, arguing that Manitoba has a plan to reach net zero without it. So for this week's AMA, we wanted to dig deeper into the arguments being made about the carbon tax. Our guest is Chris Reagan, an economics professor and director of the Max Bell School of Public Policy at McGill University. He's also the former head of Canada's Eco-Fiscal Commission and has served as an advisor for both Conservative and Liberal finance ministers in the past. He's answered your questions about the carbon tax, and here are a few highlights from the show. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
Let's start with the very basics of the carbon tax. Why do you, as an economist, feel that it is, generally speaking, the right approach?
Well, so first of all, I think we need to take climate change seriously, and that means trying to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions in a pretty significant way. So once you, I guess, accept that as an objective, the economist within me says, well, why don't we actually do this in the lowest cost way we can? So we could use what tend to be quite intrusive, what are often called direct regulations that tell firms and households what to do and when to do it and how to do it. Or we could use subsidies, which actually are very expensive because you need to raise taxes to pay for them. Or you can use a carbon price. And the carbon price will reduce emissions gradually over time. And as that carbon price rises, it will reduce emissions. People will change their behavior and they will use less of those high carbon intensive things. But also, because it's so flexible and people can respond in different ways, you may respond very differently than I respond, and somebody else may respond in a third and different way. That flexibility is what gives rise to its low cost. And so I think, and this is exactly why now over 400 economists across the country have signed this letter in response to the critics, advocating a carbon price as not just a good way to do it, but as the lowest cost way to reduce emissions.
I'm going to go to the phone lines right now. We're getting so many calls. I do have some questions for you, but let's let Laura Pratt in Toronto ask the next question. She's calling us. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Ian. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, you're very welcome. What's your question for Chris Reagan?
Okay. Hi, Chris. I'm in favor of the carbon tax, and I'm a great fan of Justin Trudeau and have a lot of faith in him. I've done my best to understand this, and I've been working my bit over here with the young people in my lives. I've got four voting-age children and their friends, and the question my kids ask me is, okay, so you're charged a tax, and then the rebate, in theory, exceeds that cost in most cases. But where is the money for the rebate coming from? And I don't know the answer to that. I wonder if you could tell me.
Thank you for the question, Laura. First of all, you don't have to be a fan of Justin Trudeau to like carbon pricing. Let me make that clear. Look, your friends and relatives are asking the $64,000 question, which is, you know, where do these rebates come from? And also kind of what's the logic of the rebates? So here's the basic story. The logic of the carbon price is we put a tax on carbon intensive things like gasoline, diesel, natural gas, propane, all that kind of stuff. And because you now face a higher price for those things, over time, you start to change your behavior. You change the way you drive or which car you own or what your furnace looks like or the kinds of vacations you take or how you heat your house or whatever. But the goal here isn't to make each of us poorer. Okay, it's not so that we are poorer and therefore consume less. It's just because we want to switch away from those higher priced things. So the rebates, what the government, the federal government does in every province where the federal policy exists, which is every province except for British Columbia and Quebec, the government takes 90% of the revenues raised from that fuel charge and sends it back on an equal, more or less equal per capita basis, and we can get into the details, in the province. And so it's the carbon tax revenues that's financing those rebates. Now, then people say, well, this is kind of crazy. These economists must be smoking something funny because they're, you know, they're advocating that we get taxed with one hand but get a rebate with the other. Well, the whole point of the rebate is so that your overall purchasing power is maintained as much as possible. Because again, the logic isn't to make you poorer. So you get the rebate in quarterly deposits or checks in the mail, and you can spend those rebates on anything you want. Now, some people, I guess, might spend it all on gasoline, in which case the whole thing isn't doing much good. But most people are going to spend it on a wide variety of things. So the higher price on the fuel is driving your behavioral change over time, and the rebates are restoring your purchasing power. And the final comment is that those rebates are calibrated so that 80% of the households within each province are going to get more back or the same amount or more on the rebate than they would pay through higher prices. The upper 20% of households by income are going to get less back in a rebate.
Laura, do you have a follow-up question?
I want to confirm where that 10%, the missing 10% is going then. Is that what's going to address climate change?
So it's all, the whole carbon tax is addressing climate change because it's getting us all to reduce our emissions. The 10% actually is quite interesting, Laura. The 10% is actually going, being paid. My understanding is it's being paid to what's called the MUSH sector, municipalities, universities, schools, and hospitals, MUSH, because all of those entities will face higher costs from the carbon price, but they don't have an ability to kind of change their prices, if you like. And so that's a transfer back to that sector. But 90% of the revenues are going back as rebates to households.
Ryan Ironstand is in, where is he? He's in Riding Mountain, Manitoba. Hi, Ryan.
Oh, nice.
Hi there. How are you doing there?
Doing well.
Where's Riding Mountain National Park? I'm right on top of the mountain. I just thought I'd give you a quick call. But really, the question I have for Chris, and thank you again, Ian, for your time, and I really appreciate the topics that you have. What is the effectiveness, really, right? Because sure, we have our own political spectrum on what we believe. In terms of speaking for the small people, so to speak, and I hope Justin's listening, but what's the effectiveness of this in the long term? If Justin gets another 4 years, Conservatives get another 4 years, Chris, what's the long-term effectiveness of this carbon tax?
That's a great question. First of all, Brian, let me just say Riding Mountain, I had a great family vacation in Riding Mountain several years ago.
Wow.
I remember it fondly. So it's a great question about effectiveness. So I guess two comments. Number one, there are many jurisdictions around the world that have had carbon prices and still have carbon prices, and they are experiencing emissions reductions, whether it's the European Union that has a cap and trade system, or the UK, or California that has a cap and trade system that's connected to Quebec's cap and trade system. British Columbia has its own carbon tax, and now federally we have a carbon tax. So there's lots of jurisdictions. We are still in in early years for the federal carbon price. It was instituted in 2019. We have seen some reductions already in emissions, depending on which year you choose. From 2018 to 2022, the number is about 5.5%. Latest estimates suggest that. Those aren't quite final estimates. But so a lot of people say, well, that's not very much. But if in fact, if we can reduce emissions with the carbon price by 1% or 1.5% per year, and you know we're going at this for a few decades, and of course as the carbon price goes higher, it'll actually generate larger reductions. So people shouldn't be looking for dramatic changes in emissions from the carbon price. Most of us aren't going to change our behavior in dramatic ways. We will change our behavior bit by bit, quarter by quarter, year by year. But those small changes and gradual changes added up over 40 million Canadians will add up over time to big changes.
I am speaking to you at a moment of grave crisis.
I'm Jeff Turner, and this is Recall. It's a series about history, not the ancient past, but history that's still hot to the touch. In this first season, I explore a revolutionary political movement that brought a modern democracy to the brink. You can find Recall, How to Start a Revolution, on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before I go to the next call, Chris, let me ask a question that I think might be on the minds of some people who are listening, whether they get through or not. And that is, at a time of intense inflation, I mean, as recently as this weekend, I had two different people, you know, say to me they just are continue to be astonished by how expensive food is at the grocery store. I'm sure that there are people, not even for partisan reasons, who are frustrated to think that the price of gas is going to go up tomorrow because of this carbon tax at a time when so many other prices are going up. Is this an extra level of hardship that maybe we could avoid right now?
Right. So great question. Look, inflation has been high over the past 2 or 3 years, and it's been caused by a fascinating combination of things that have almost nothing to do with the carbon price. The Bank of Canada, but also at University of Calgary, Trevor Toome and Jennifer Winters have done research that shows that the effect of the carbon price on inflation has been something like 1/20th of the increase. So it's very small impact, but it's still the case that I think one of the reasons we're talking about this now is because of the inflation has challenged affordability over the past couple of years. And I completely get that. But this is also where the rebates come in, because the carbon price, will make gasoline more expensive tomorrow by another 3.3 cents per liter. But the rebate will also go up, so that you know the rebates for the year ahead will be bigger than the rebates for the year behind us. And that's designed to address the affordability issue. So you have to wait for a quarter to get the money. I get that. But the overall affordability of life, the cost of living, if you like, really is going to be, for 80% of those households, is not going to be higher as a result of the carbon price.
Here's something that might make a clear point to our listeners. You are certainly not, I mean, you support this carbon tax. You're not an apologist for the government. And I think it'll be clear in the way that you answer this question. How do you feel about the Liberal announcement about the 3-year carbon tax exemption for home heating oil?
Well, you can probably guess what I will say about that, Ian.
Yeah.
I thought that was a very bad idea. And in fact, what happened, it took about 2.5 minutes before people, including at least two Western premiers, started asking for other exemptions. And the thing is, as soon as you carve out an exemption for home heating fuel, in this case, I mean, exemptions beget other exemptions. And I don't think there was a good economic rationale or a good policy rationale for that exemptions. And I think, frankly, the government realized as soon as they had done it that it was probably a mistake. But I think now they've sort of dug in and said no more exemptions. But I would actually prefer a world where you repeal that exemption. And in fact, I would say this: the rebates could have solved that problem as well. So the claim by the government back in October, when they carved out this exemption, was that the carbon price was challenging affordability for people, especially in Atlantic Canada. Well, if you wanted to, you could actually ramp up the rebates. In fact, 2 years ago, I think the federal government introduced a grocery rebate because of rising grocery prices because of the inflation that we were experiencing. Well, you could adjust these rebates, and rather than exempt the carbon price or exempt some fuels from the carbon price or pause or delay the carbon price increases, if you as a government are worried about affordability for your citizens, you could always actually ramp up those rebates temporarily. I think that would actually be a better policy than delaying or exempting the carbon price.
I think your answer makes it pretty clear that your perspective is that of an economist and not a political operative. So I think that is interesting. Okay, we have 4 minutes left in the program. We have a lot of questions. And unfortunately, for those of you who are waiting, we're only going to be able to go to one more. But maybe we should try to do another AMA on this topic in the near future, because there are clearly a lot of questions and a lot of interest. So I apologize to those of you who've been waiting patiently. Let's see if we can fit in this last question in our remaining 3.5 minutes. Patrick Burek is in Winnipeg. Hi, Patrick.
Hello, Ian. Hi.
Hi. What's your question for Chris?
I'll be very quick.
Sure.
Chris, I'd be interested to know how cap and trade is different from a carbon price. It seems to me, from the perspective of economics, that in both cases you're pricing carbon, but just in different ways. And I was, I guess, just wondering why this policy instead of cap and trade. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Patrick, it's a great question, and I'm not sure I can do it justice in 3 minutes, but I'm going to give it a shot. So a cap and trade system, which is what exists in Quebec, by the way, is where the government sets a cap, a maximum limit on total emissions within the province. Then they effectively print up permits for that number of emissions per year, and then they distribute those permits. Sometimes they auction them off, sometimes they give them for free, sometimes they do a mix. But the point is, and this is typically only to the large industrial emitters, including fuel refineries and fuel distributors, and then they trade in a market. That's the trade part of cap and trade, and a price is established. So in Quebec today, the price of an emissions permit is about $45 per ton, a little bit lower than the federal carbon tax, but it's doing the same thing conceptually, is that in Quebec, it drives up the price of gasoline, it drives up the price of natural gas and home heating fuel and all that kind of stuff, and it drives the same behavioral change. So the two, when we talk about carbon pricing, it could be a carbon tax or a cap and trade. I would say in broad outline, the two systems are very, very similar. But the carbon tax administratively is a little bit easier. The cap and trade system is a little bit more complex, geeky behind the scenes. But I'll say one other thing. In Quebec, nobody discusses the cap and trade system. It is completely not a political issue. There's lots of other stuff to talk about in Quebec, but not the cap and trade system. But of course, as you know, the carbon tax in the rest of Canada is a very live issue. And part of that is because of the visibility of the carbon tax. So maybe the lesson here is that more complicated, geeky, behind the scenes and largely invisible system in Quebec, maybe that's the path forward for Canada. You never know.
You did a very good job of explaining that, and you have a minute left over.
Wow.
So, I mean, let me ask a quick follow-up. Is the data there that this publicly invisible cap-and-trade system is actually achieving a reduction in carbon use?
Yeah. So the cap, the system is designed in Quebec, and it's linked to California in what's called the Western Climate Initiative. And the cap, the aggregate cap on emissions, is declining by 3 or 4% a year, and emissions are declining. And that's actually, that is, the emissions decline, the cap tightens, the price rises over time. And so that system is working. So, and Europe, by the way, has what's called the emissions trading system, the ETS. And that system has been working for about 10 years, maybe a little bit more. So cap and trade is a perfectly respectable option. And as I said, in kind of broad outline, it's doing the same thing. It's raising the price of carbon intensive things. It's sending economic incentives to households and small businesses and big businesses to, you know, to change their behavior over time.
Now you're out of time. Okay, Chris.
All right.
Thank you very much. That's been really interesting. And as I say, we have so many calls, so many that we couldn't get to. And I think that's a sign of interest in this topic, and really appreciate your answers. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
Chris Reagan, an economics professor and director of the Max Bell School of Public Policy at McGill University, also the former head of Canada's Eco-Fiscal Commission, and has served as an advisor for both Conservative and Liberal finance ministers in the past, and he joined us from Montreal. That was a portion of Cross Country Checkup's AMA about the carbon tax with Chris Reagan, an economics professor and director of the Max Bell School of Public Policy at McGill University. He's also the former head of Canada's Eco-Fiscal Commission and has served as an advisor for both Conservative and Liberal finance ministers in the past. If you'd like to listen to the full two-hour edition of Cross Country Checkup, you can stream the podcast on the CBC Listen app. And if you'd like to share comments or appear on a future show, go to cbc.ca/aircheck. I'm Ian Hanemansik. Thanks for listening. The next live edition of Checkup airs on CBC Radio, CBC News Network, and CBC News Explore next Sunday.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.